miles of black ribbon on the lone highway. Men turn into boys on the lone highway. Rest up creeps thrive on the lone highway. Pretty girls beware out on the lone highway. On the lone highway. Revolution Radio, it's Saturday, and it's time for the Scorpio Conspiracy Show with your host, Scorpio. Lost a little honey on the lone highway.
Let me pour another. Hello, and welcome to Operation Scorpio. Today's date is Saturday, September 26th. 2020. Man, we're cranking through September here, man. Hard to believe. And welcome to the free-range open-air insane asylum we call Earth. Well, the winds of change are blowing, but they might not be going in the direction that our overlords desire. There really does seem to be a silent awakening happening as I speak. Every day, more normies are beginning to get the sense that something is terribly wrong with our reality. That things just aren't adding up anymore. Yes, the revolution won't be televised. Remember that one? The revolution won't be televised. Well, it's true. And it's further proof that this revolution we are witnessing is a made-for-TV special event. Kind of like CBS Night at the Movies. Remember that? Back when there was only three channels? Yeah, back when there was only three channels. Back in my day. Yeah, back in the old days. So, guys, here we are. And we have this alleged pandemic. You know, this pandemic that was so deadly, our entire society had to be shut down, right? Worldwide, too. And, you know, a pandemic where, you know, nobody knows anyone that's sick, you know, or very few people. I ask everybody I talk to, and I talk to people all over the world now, and I haven't talked to one person other than a guy in Australia that knew somebody that supposedly had COVID and then they were better in a week, you know. Translation, they had the flu or the sniffles. It happens. And yeah, so we had to shut the whole freaking world down. And, you know, this disease, it's so deadly, you don't even know you have it, right? You know, countless millions of people who are testing positive have no symptoms, but they might become a super spreader, so you better just stay home. Doc, I feel fine. Doesn't matter. You've tested positive for COVID. But, Doc, are you sure? Yes, the test never lies. It's science, right? It's science, guys, so you can't question it. If it's science, that means shut up and do as you're told. Okay, it's science. Yeah, so I don't know. A couple of weeks ago, you know, if you guys remember, I was talking on my show that we had hit the 6 million mark for, you know, positive cases of COVID. We've hit the magic 6 million mark, the magic number, 6 million. And that was 2 weeks ago, right? So last night, you know, I watched a little bit of the NBC Nightly News with some idiot on YouTube. I watched a few minutes of it, and they let out the beginning of the newscast that there had been 7 million positive cases of COVID as of tonight. And I'm thinking, okay, so in 2 weeks, there's been a million more positive cases of COVID, right? And if you look up, you know, the government figures, they're claiming that 10 to 20% of the tests turn out positive, right? So let's just say it's 10% positive. That means you'd have to have 10 million tests done over the last 2 weeks to get another million positive tests, right? 10 million tests done in 2 weeks. Sorry, but I'm calling bullshit on this one. I mean, did they really expect us to believe this? It's incredible. So in just 2 short weeks, we had 10 million idiots line up in their cars, you know, socially distanced, right? Make sure your car is 6 feet apart, too. It's just too dangerous. And, you know, wearing their masks while inside their car, right? So we had 10 million people who lined up to be nasally raped by a giant Q-tip in the last 2 weeks. I just don't believe it. So, you know, if you do the math here, this is science, 10 million tests in 2 weeks, that comes out to 714,285 tests a day. So over 700,000 tests a day to reach this, you know, mythical 7 million number we have now. So that didn't add up. Sorry, I'm not buying it. And it's absurd, really, once you start to think about it. And, you know, I've read in a couple of different places that the government is being billed $180 per test. Okay, so $180 a test. So if we've had 7 million positive tests and there's 10% positive, that means that there's already been 70 million tests done in the United States out of a country of, what, 350 million? If you count all the illegal aliens. So that's like a fifth of the population already that's been tested. So 70 million positive tests, 7 million tests total, that's like $12 billion in tests. $12 billion in COVID tests. Well, that's a great use of money, isn't it? And these, you know, these PCR tests, you know, polymerase chain reaction, you know, they replicate DNA. Well, I did some reading on this, and with these COVID tests, they're replicating the DNA 40 times. 40 times. So basically, that's why so many people are testing positive that have no symptoms. You know, if you've had a flu shot or there's some little scrap of coronavirus in your blood somehow, or in your nasal passage, I should say, then you're going to test positive. What a joke. What a tremendous lie we are all living under right now. And, you know, even the guy that invented the test said, no, it's no good for testing for disease and don't use it. Oh, it's science. Sorry, we're using that test anyway. And here, you know, we have a situation where you've had, you know, so many people's lives destroyed by a lie, a fraud, a hoax. You know, and so many of these people that have small businesses are losing their asses. And, man, I can really feel for that because I've always, you know, had a small business. I've never really been the type to run out and get jobs. So I always had a small business. And man, you know, when you have your own business, you work all the time and you put everything you have into that thing, man. And to see it wiped out because of government edict, that's sad and it's not right. People should be getting angry, man. Seriously, that's a joke. Yeah, so Of course, the other thing that we're seeing in the news all the time are, you know, the cops are just, you know, they're just killing black people for fun, for target practice. They all hate black people. It's another absurd, you know, clown show that we're being subjected to here, man. It's just unbelievable. And, you know, I'm not a huge fan of the cops myself. I think there's plenty of room for reform, right, without defunding the police. I mean, you know, basically begging for either martial law or a nationalized police force, or those guys in the blue helmets to come in and save us all. So that's an absurd proposition, isn't it? We wouldn't need so many cops if we had a society that was based on personal responsibility, but, you know, that's kind of water under the bridge right now. But, you know, let's start by not militarizing the police, as has been going on since the 1980s. And no more telling the cops that the citizens are the enemy. And how about this? No more Israeli training of the police. That'd be a good idea. And I think most importantly, how about we go back to neighborhood policing? You know, where the cop lives in the neighborhood where he polices. You know, people, that way people know him and he's responsible for his own behavior. You can't be a total, you know, douche to the people in the neighborhood that you live in. It puts it in a whole different, you know, context when the cop has to live in the neighborhood he polices. But no, we can't have that. And man, you know, these stories of these, you know, these black people being, you know, killed by the police, it's just getting to be absurd. You know, and it's like, two or three weeks ago, there was this, you know, naked black guy running down the streets of, you know, New York. I forget the name of the city offhand, but someplace in New York. So we got a, you know, a naked 250-pound black man running down the street naked, high on PCP, while it's snowing. While it's snowing. So exactly, you know, what's the proper police procedure to deal with that? You know, I mean, I don't think that's such an easy thing to deal with. A naked 250-pound black man high on PCP running down the street naked. I don't think that's an easy thing to deal with. And I would say it'd be a pretty unsavory job. I wouldn't, you know, that's not a job I'd want to have to deal with right at the moment. And of course, you know, both the mayor and the police were black. But it's systemic racism. Oh, yeah. Everybody's racist. And, man, it seems like every police chief in every big city is either a lesbian or a black woman. I don't know. That's just what I'm seeing. It's kind of strange. But it's all systemic racism. And we need racial justice. And what is that? What does racial justice mean? I've never heard it defined or exactly how the government is going to provide that for us. But that's the call we hear from these people. And really, you know, racial justice, it's just code for the government taking further control over people's behavior. And I don't think that's going to work out so well. I don't think that's the answer. And racial justice, it's really not a term that means much of anything. And then we got Breonna Taylor, right? Oh, she was shot. And that's terrible. I mean, I'm not supporting the cop shoot anyone. Not a fan of that. But, I mean, guys, her boyfriend takes a shot out the window, you know, while they got cops at the door. Well, what do you think's going to happen at that point? You know, you got a bunch of guys pumped up on adrenaline with guns, and you just shot at them. It's not going to be a good ending to that story, no matter what happens. So, again, it's another ridiculous situation that they're screaming for. Oh, this is so unfair, you know. Well, yeah, maybe next time don't shoot out the window at the cops. And, of course, you know, this Breonna Taylor, she hadn't worked in 3 years. They said, oh, she's this wonderful EMT, blah, blah, blah. Well, she hadn't worked in 3 years. And, you know, her boyfriend was probably a drug dealer. But, you know, to be honest, I think that drugs should really essentially be legalized, then we wouldn't have these kind of problems. And, you know, until 1914, you know, you could walk into a pharmacy and buy some heroin or some cocaine or whatever you wanted. And I'm not advocating, you know, for the use of drugs, but it's hard to believe that it's only really been just a little over 100 years where we made drugs illegal. And it's pretty obvious if you add up all the damage that this police state has had on people's lives, all the people killed, all the people thrown in jail for 30 years. I think having legalized drugs would be a smaller toll on society for sure. You know, it should be discouraged. No one should be encouraged to use hard drugs, but I don't see how this is helping things. And it's hard to believe it's only been 100 years where you could just go into the pharmacy and buy drugs. And, you know, if you had a culture of personal responsibility, I don't think it would be that big of an issue, but we don't. So anyway, those are the sort of things that have been on my mind the last week here. And that said, I'd like to bring on Mr. Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Giuseppe, how are you, man?
Hey there, Mr. Scorpio. I'm doing well. Excellent intro. Hits all the salient points as always. You know, it's interesting that I don't know if you caught in the last day. I read it last night, so maybe it was purposely buried in the Friday night graveyard of news you don't really want covered. But did you see that the Federal Reserve is talking about being able to make direct payments to American citizens because they believe the bottleneck between the controlled Democrats and the controlled Republicans has not gotten any stimulus payments to people in far too long, whereas really to save this economy, there should have been, you know, $2,000 to $6,000 a month going to every home, $2,000 maybe to each individual, and $6,000 to families of four or more, something like that, to keep the economy going. So it's so interesting. Well, I'll stop for a second. Did you see that?
Yes, I did. And that's an excellent point you're making. Continue.
Oh, well, what's interesting to me is if you apply the Hegelian dialectic of problem, reaction, solution, the bottleneck by the corrupt Senate and Congress is intentional to lead us further along to the Great Reset. And the which is the ability to only have digital currency. So if you get to the point where the Federal Reserve is giving you your Gibbs, all of a sudden, where do we go from there? It's only a matter of time before all paper money's gone.
Right, right. And you know what's interesting about this is that, like you said, they're sort of, you know, baby stepping us into a digital currency. And, you know, one thing that they pointed out in this material I was going over for the World Economic Forum Global Reset is that they plan on having some of these digital payments have an expiration date on it. So you have to, you know, spend that money by a certain time or poof, it's gone. And that means you're not going to be able to save money in the future. You just have to live hand to mouth.
Well, right. That's the intent for sure. Yeah, good old World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab, get down on your knees and lick my boots. I mean, if ever there was a villain, wannabe, a cosplay Bond villain, it's that fellow.
Yeah, he needs a scar on the side of his face and a cat that he's, you know, obsessively petting on his lap. You know, that'd be the whole costume right there.
Yeah, you know, and the next point I was wrote down to bring up from your introduction is that, you know, I would argue that the police show incredible restraint in dealing with the absolute quantity and quality of subhuman behavior they see on a regular day in and day out because of the violent gangs, because of the drug abusers, because of the MS-13 absolute violence. It's everywhere, even in the small towns now, because of the underreported crystal meth plague of this nation. I mean, it's just what those cops see. And granted, there are some bad cops, there's no doubt about it, but you know, if people behaved the way when I was a teenager, when I was a young adult in the 70s and 80s, you know, there were not real problems with cops because people knew how to behave. You know, it's something called obey the law and think for yourself. For example, this whole lunacy with Breonna Taylor, my wife totally had me convinced she was a poor victim until it starts to come out that, you know, she used to, Breonna, that is, used to make $20 an hour as an EMT, but you know, that was kind of low income. So she switched to drug dealing and started to make $20 a minute. And so that's why she was dismissed from her job, because she couldn't be trusted to not steal some of those good drugs. So, you know, there's an old saying, you make your bed so you got to sleep in it. And that's what these urban thugs have done. I feel bad because if you look at the statistics in America of poverty, maybe 19% of blacks live in poverty. That's really way too high. And it could have been addressed decades ago effectively, not just giving them money, but, you know, the old give a man a fish or teach a man to fish idea. But the point is that's 81% of blacks that are playing by the rules, just like you and I and everybody else. They're decent people. Those are the black people I feel bad for, that they're profiled, that they have to like wonder what's going to happen if they, you know, take a trip to a suburb to go watch their kid play in a baseball tournament or something, and then all of a sudden they're being tailed by this is a true story, being tailed by like three cops in rural Wisconsin. I know that fella this happened to, and they don't deserve that, and that's where it's over the top. But for most of it, the other things, especially in the urban cities, they made their own bed.
Yeah, and you know, I don't think it's such a great idea that, you know, holding these people up to young black people as some kind of example, and how they were victims of the system because they were black. I mean, you know, like I said, that Breonna Taylor, she hadn't worked in 3 years, and you know, okay, so she was dealing drugs, and you know, which I'm not coming out as for drug use, but I just think that if you had legalized drugs or regulated somehow, I don't see how it could make things worse. You know, Snippets was saying that easy access to drugs has been really bad on the city she lives in. And I agree, but here we have easy access to drugs, but they're illegal, and people are being thrown in jail. People are killing each other for territory in which to sell drugs. And then you've got all these people that get thrown in jail for 10, 20, 30 years for various drug crimes. I just think if you added it all up, I don't see how it could be worse.
If you look into the results of countries where, for example, a great example is Portugal. Portugal had a rampant illegal drug problem, you know, putting them in jail, abuse, violence, theft, murder. So they realized, let's just make it legal. Let's take away the enticement to have the black market revenue. Let's take away, let's let anybody who wants to have these hard drugs have it. And you know what? It all went away because the people who are addicts just stayed at home and did their drugs and were basically nonviolent, and everything improved in the society. And that's the key. It's not that the people who are addicts are the problem. It's when they can't get access to their drugs and they have to steal to have money, and you create this violent Wild West subculture. That's the problem. You know, let them shoot heroin. If they die, they die. Who cares? That's really, there's too many humans on this planet already anyway. But if you want the great majority to have a civil society, you know, create camps where, hey, if you choose, you got to have your heroin, you got to have your crystal meth, whatever, you're going to go stay at camp. I'm high all the time, and we'll give you a bed, and there's you know, it's like you go away to kids used to do in the 60s and 70s, go away in the summer to summer camp. Those are sane solutions, and take away the enticement for these organized criminals to be able to make billions of dollars selling illegal drugs and the violence that comes with that kind of criminal syndicate.
Yeah, right, exactly. And while Bob is saying to eradicate the drugs is the only answer,
I don't see how that's possible.
Never. I mean, that would be good, I guess, but I don't think it's possible to do that. And frankly, if people want to do drugs, it's their choice. You know, I think if you're going to have freedom, people have to be able to take drugs if they want to. And, you know, it's not like everyone's going to stay an addict. Some people go, wow, I'm screwing my life up. I better quit. There should be easy access to, you know, programs to help people. They don't cost $40,000 for a 2-week stay, you know.
And there's a price to pay for that going to camp high all the time, which is you can't drive a car. You can't do a lot of things that being a clean citizen brings you. So, you know, there you have to have a solid model to it. And the other thing I would say about to Wild Bob is that if you look at nature, you know, the entire spectrum of the panspermia that came here and created all forms of life on this planet, every being likes to get a buzz. I mean, insects like to get high. All types of mammals like to get high. Lizards like to get high. There's in Africa, there's these trees where the berries ferment and it becomes like essentially liquor. And those trees are surrounded by, you know, 50 species. Everybody wants to get a buzz. So it's not just humans. It's almost wired into the genetics.
Yeah. And, Wild Bob just made another good point that only moral people can remain free. That's absolutely true. And, you know, he said earlier that he remembers America when every other person wasn't on drugs. I remember those days too. And that wasn't, that was because of people were raised right and were, you know, raised, hey, you don't do drugs. It's going to ruin your life, man. You know, and not because the cops were stopping access to it. I think people have been able to get their hands on heroin and cocaine ever since, you know, they've been, you know, manufactured. So, but I just see that, you know, this whole war on drugs has just amped up the police state. You know, we have undercover cops, we have all, you know, all these different special drug units that are just, I don't know. I just don't see in the end how it helps. Cause I don't want a militarized police state. I'd rather have a state where people are free, and some people fuck up and take drugs and that they shouldn't. Some people OD, that's their choice. They're doing it now. I mean, we got a horrible problem with these, fentanyl and what's the, OxyContin, which is actually a pharmaceutical.
Well, you just hit it on the head right there. The whole reason drugs are illegal is because of the, good old John D. Rockefeller trying to, monopolize the allopathic pharmaceutical industry about 100 years ago. And that's where all that came from. And, you know, if you just investigate, I urge you to go take a look at how Portugal turned it all around by, legalizing drug use. It's really remarkable.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, drug use is a victimless crime. I mean, it's a choice people make. Again, it should be, kids need to be taught, hey, you don't do drugs, it's bad news, man. But again, I just think this militarized police state we live in now, a lot of it's because of the war on drugs. It's incredible.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that a lot of because the globalist parasitic influence on our culture has created, as we documented and you brilliantly brought to the table with the Century of Self shows we did, is that the deviant subhuman Shlomo Freud made it acceptable to live only through your mind, whereas really 6,000 years ago, the Taoist priest in Oriental medicine pointed out that a real healthy human is a triangle, a perfect triangle of body, mind, and spirit. And so what we have now, it's gotten even worse with the nanny state or the daddy state, the two sides of the corp, the kosher sandwich. You've got people who are uncomfortable, especially males, expressing their emotions and comfortable with you know, getting it off your chest. So what do? They turn to a substance that wipes it all away and gets you high. And then similarly, a lot of sensitive women turn to drugs because it's so hopeless for them. They look at the insanity that's this society's become because of the malignancy of the internationalist Jew upon this once great nation. And so there's where you get the rampant drug use. If you legalize it and you give the moral society the opportunity to function, and you give the drug users the ability to the addicts to have what they want, but you're not going to drive a car, you're not going to, you know, negatively impact, you do any kind of crime, the hammer comes down in you. None of this judicial the judicial JEU, all these activist judges giving free passes to these people who commit violent crimes while on drugs. No, none of that. You do it once, you're out, and you're gonna be doing hard time for like 20 years. And you create a system where you remove essentially the billions that are there on the black market. I think things would change in a very positive way.
Yeah, because the so-called scarcity is what keeps the prices so high. But it's just, to me, it was always an excuse to create this police state that we're in. And like you said, you know, if you don't have a moral society, you're never going to have the ability to have a high-functioning, high-trust society. There has to be a moral code that people
live by.
And this moral relativism that the international Jew has hoisted upon society is very corrosive, and it's only going to lead to worse places than where we are now.
Well, if you substitute, I totally agree with a moral code. I mean, I live my life as a man of honor. I was raised that way. So were you. So were all the decent men who now were called toxic masculinity by these weaponized minorities. And there's the problem. You've got You'd think that if you watch today's mind-controlling media, and I know this doesn't add up to 100% intentionally, you'd think that 80% of society was homosexual with this LGBTQ WTF lunacy, right? Not true. 3% of America is homosexual, and probably only 5% of that 3%, which adds up to 0.015%, are the radicalized, weaponized minority. Similarly, with everything catering to the internationalist Jew, you'd think that 90% of America was Jewish. Not the case. 2% of America is Jewish. And of that 2%, maybe 2% is the power-mad, Talmudic, satanic, internationalist Jew. There's a lot of decent Jews who follow the Torah and are good people, and they're sadly getting labeled by, again, this weaponized minority. And then you look at the spearhead for the internationalist Jew to try and destroy the sovereign nation, the United States, and create a communist, anarchistic shithole that will become a easy member of the North Atlantic Union and be controlled by the UN or whatever globalist body takes over. That, 19% of the population is black, but you'd think it was 90% because Black Lives Matter, man. It's got to be black this and black that. And you know what? I don't care. Yeah. I mean, I think that everybody has the right to do their own thing, but I'm so tired of the globalist control of the media covering these deviants, these weaponized minorities. I want to see the success stories about black people. I want to see coverage of the 10,000 people who gathered last year in Long Island, New York arena to protest Zionism in America and to protest the ugly Nazi-like concentration camp of the Gaza. These are good Jews. Nobody saw that on the news. And I want to go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to interject that I think the black population is closer to 12 to 13%. I don't think it's 20%.
Oh, really? Well, there you go.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure about that, yeah. That 20% would be one out of five people is black in the United States. That's, you know.
Huh. I have seen that 13% number, but I thought that referred to the violent black males. I thought it was 19. If you, I don't know. We'll look it up and we'll figure it out.
We'll have to look it up. But that's the number I've heard is 12 to 13%. But either way, your points
it's
are
still
valid,
a minority, right? Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And And then thank God that my favorite thing about this new SCOTUS pick is that it knocks Ruth Bader Ginsburg out of the news. I'm so tired of hearing about what a cultural icon Ruth Bader Ginsburg was. I mean, my God, it's just hard to believe, isn't it?
Well, it's not hard to believe for me, Scorpio. I haven't taken my pussy hat off in a week to honor RBG. She was such a superhero for this country.
Yeah. And, you know, I caught on this newscast I watched, they played a little clip of, some rabbi doing the ceremony inside the rotunda. And what was really interesting is that she was, talking about how wonderful Ruth was, blah, 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 blah. And then she goes, and even when Ruth Bader Ginsburg was in the minority and her rulings were overruled, they weren't a defeat. They were a blueprint for the future.
Oh.
Yeah, and I thought, wait a minute here now. They're a blueprint for the future. So it's like, okay, so whatever the court happens to decide, well, screw that. It's all just, water under the bridge. We're gonna get what Ruth wanted later.
Well, the blueprint for the despicable Ginsburg happened 100 years earlier with the Zionist fixer Samuel Untmeyer going and solving the horny Woodrow Wilson's problem when he was doinking one of the professor's wives over at Princeton when he was the president of Princeton. And Samuel Untmeyer said, hey, Woodrow, we can make this go away. And they did. But we need a couple of favors, Woody. And the first favor was putting Louis Brandeis, the traitorous Zionist, on the Supreme Court. And the second favor was being the Luca Brasi muscle to go into World War One and make sure that the banksters won the war, not the heroic Germans.
Isn't it interesting, too, that drugs, we've only had this prohibition of drugs since 1914. So that's just a hair over 100 years. And, the timing of it's interesting, too, because 1913, we had the Federal Reserve income tax. And then, of course, 1914 is the dawn of World War One. So a lot of things happened in that year. It's a very significant year, 1913, 1914. Huge.
Oh, hold on. That's the other big favor Untmeyer got was the Federal Reserve. That's the huge one. You're right.
Yeah. Yeah. Major changes happened. And that's only 100 years ago, just like this medical monopoly that the Rockefellers created with the help of the Flexner brothers. It's only been 100 years that we've lived under a medical monopoly, which is rapidly turning into medical tyranny.
Rapidly, it's total medical tyranny. Yeah, it's insane. It's so funny that you've got people who are pretty smart people. We were guests on Dr. Jim Fetzer's show Tuesday, The Raw Deal, over there on Studio B, which is so great that Jim's back on Revolution Radio, and his good buddy Rolf was all like, well, the pharmaceuticals, big pharma eradicated smallpox, and he actually believed that, and so many people believe it, and it's not true. If you just look into you know, spend 20 minutes looking into the real history of smallpox, what really and the so-called founder of modern vaccinations, Edward Jenner, it's just lunacy. It's all apocryphal. What Jenner really did was managed to create a vaccination that killed a lot of people. What really got rid of the episodic, which means it comes and goes, smallpox vaccine was three things that get rid of every pandemic, which is isolation, you quarantine the sick, sanitation, you clean things up and kill the bug, and nutrition. If people get a lot of good healthy food like vitamin C, vitamin D, whatever, in a healthy, balanced diet, boom, these pandemics go away. And so what's funny is his erroneous interpretation that because the milkmaids were milking the cows, and so they were exposed to cowpox, and that's why they didn't get smallpox. But in reality, what I believe is because their hands were already always full of milk, they were washing their hands all the time. That's why they didn't get it.
Interesting. Yeah, and you know, you brought up quarantine the sick. That's always what's been done in the past. During the tuberculosis thing in the early 1900s, they had sanitariums they'd send people to and, you know, get them back to health. Another thing that they would suggest to people who had TB was to move to a hot, dry climate, because that makes a difference too. So, yeah, and, you know, I was watching this thing about these vaccines, you know, the rush for the vaccine to save us all. They had this thing with – they have these vaccine freezer farms, okay, where there's this, like, you know, rows of thousands of refrigerator in these giant warehouses. And apparently these vaccines have to be kept – some of them have to be kept at negative 80 degrees Celsius, and other ones have to be kept at negative 20 degrees Celsius. And I'm thinking, this – whatever this witch's brew is – it has to be kept at negative 80 degrees Celsius, and then they're going to inject it into your body? I mean, what is going on here, guys?
Well, most people don't understand how vaccines are actually made. They're created in a slipshod manner where you take human tissue, infected human tissue, you combine it with like a little chunk of a monkey kidney or a bat brain or whatever. You grind it up in a little blender in a lab, and then you culture it, and you see what you get, right? And you keep doing that thousands of times until you cheat evolution. All these pandemics, H1N1, AIDS, swine flu, bird flu, SARS-1, MERS, SARS-CoV-2, they're all created in a lab by doing millions of repetitions until you create a cross species jump, a mutation that might have happened in 500 years. It may never have happened. And these evil subhuman Satanists are doing it for science. And it's so ridiculous. It's so evil. And so okay. So they, I think we got one. This could be a good vaccine. This could be really good. The actual intent at the leadership level is to get people sick, chronically ill, so they keep getting these vaccines. They're the stated goal of mandatory vaccination. So then they find one that they think is worth it. They do trials. Oh, it's not too bad. We're not killing too many people. And let's cook the data anyway to represent that it's really safe. And then they put this shit in giant beer brewing like blenders. And it's got everything that you couldn't possibly want to put in your body. Thimerosal, mercury, heavy metal, aluminum, aborted fetal tissue. Did you know that aborted fetal tissue, which is satanic anyway, when you introduce it into the human body, you're doing the same thing that what happens when someone has a heart transplant. The immune system will seek to reject it because the immune system doesn't want foreign human tissue in the existing body. So you're creating this nightmare scenario where for maybe 60% of the population, they're just satisfactorily chronically ill. So what does that mean? They get asthma. They get chronic fatigue. They get fibromyalgia. They get Lyme disease. All these things are in right. vaccines. They're not from nature. It's all lies. And so, but the worst part is that the other 40% are damaged irrevocably. You get autism. You kill newborn babies. It's so eugenically, satanically evil. The entire vaccine industry is one of the most giant criminal syndicates there are. And you've got the thousands of these clowns in these white coats with their men and women of letters, PhDs, that, oh, vaccines really help. No, no, they don't. If you just step back and look at honest natural medicine, you realize how criminal your escapade is and how much you're mutating so many of these gullible fools who take these vaccinations. It is all satanically evil. You should never take any vaccine. There's not one vaccine that's worth the risk. And now, as Dr. Judy Mikovits has pointed out, the COVID-2, it's in the vaccines. It's in the flu vaccine. Why are these young children suddenly getting these horrific syndromes? Because it's in their vaccine. It's in all vaccines. So it's, oh my God, right. It just makes me so angry. Yeah.
Well, it's like a perfect circle too. You're creating future customers for this medical monopoly by injecting people with God knows what. And gee, it's a real wonder why we all of a sudden there's a huge plethora of people that have autoimmune diseases, and now there's all these people with autism. Oh, it's such a mystery. What's happening? Why do people have so autism everywhere? What's going on here? You know, it's all just it's such a game they're playing, and they're really doing it. It's intentionally destroying people's immune systems, their higher functions, and then setting them up to have chronic disease and possibly death later in life to be treated by the same medical industry. It's really quite the program, isn't it?
Quite the scam. And it's the levels of money. We're talking current billions of dollars annually of profit, which if they pull this off, which their first wave COVID-19, it's failed. It's look at what Sweden did was the perfect way to handle it. And it's just despicable. But, you know, hold on to your seats. Because the second wave is going to be a lot worse. They've got something way worse coming. I mean, they always, because of their satanic agenda, they have to tell you, and I've seen the video, maybe you have too, of that despicable lowlife Gates sneering and smirking that, oh, there's going to be something worse in October or November. He knows it is because they're going to release it.
Yeah. Well, let's hope that doesn't happen. But yeah, I have seen that video. And, you know, what's going on with Bill Gates' face, man? It's like he's getting reptilian scales growing on his face. Maybe he's having trouble holding human form, or, you know, he's some kind of mutation from all the different blood drinks he has. I don't know.
I think that there is a price to pay for regular child sacrifice and using adrenochrome, and you see it in Nancy Pelosi. You see it in how the debauchery and degradation of the Clintons, and I think he's right there. I mean, he's not looking good. You're muted, bud. Well, Scorpio is either muted or he's the Ecuadorian police have kicked in his door. Here he is. Are you back?
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, operator error. Okay. You know, Fake War in the chat room just posted Eustace Mullins' Murder by Injection.
That's
and
a
I believe
great
you can
one.
Get a PDF of that on the internet. There used to be a copy on the internet. You can read the whole book. But it shows you what a trailblazer and visionary Eustace Mullins was. That book is more relevant now than when it was written. And it's
we
interesting.
We should do a series
of
shows.
Yeah, we should do a whole show on Mullins, man. The guy
multiple
was just
shows,
incredible.
Man.
I have all of his books. Yeah, and, I do too. It's funny. He wrote this book called The New World Order, and it just so happened that the book published right before George Bush's famous New World Order speech. And so, again, he was sort of ahead of the curve on that one, too.
Yeah, and his lineage with his mentor being Ezra Pound, and the whole story of Ezra Pound, man, saving his life. Instead of being hanged as a traitor, he went into the mental institution, and that probably was not easy time, but it was Eustace Mullins who got him out. So it's just fascinating, the whole story of what it takes to be a true truth patriot today. I mean, look at what's being done to Jim Fetzer and James Tracy and Kevin Barrett and others who dare to speak the truth. And it's horrible. It's really sad.
Yeah. Mullins wrote a book about Ezra Pound. It's called This Difficult Individual. It's a great read, and it's a quite a different book than, you know, most of his books. And because, you know, Ezra Pound was really a genius as a poet and a writer.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, he had no choice but to – he had to plead to, you know, essentially insanity and go to the mental hospital, because they were charging him with treason and they planned on hanging him.
Exactly. That's exactly
And
right.
It was Ezra Pound that gave Mullins the idea, like, hey, write a book on the Federal Reserve. Go look into it. And, of course, this is like in the early 1950s. No one had even heard the Federal Reserve, hardly, a very secretive institution, especially back then. So it's hard to believe Mullins wrote the very first book on the Federal Reserve, published in 1955.
Yeah, and what's really amazing is Ezra Pound is seeing all this, and he was one of the, you know, the pithy phrase for people who aren't awake. They're like, he's woke, right? All these people who claim to be woke are not, and it's so laughable. But Ezra Pound was really awake, and he saw what was really going on 100 years ago. And there were a few others, like, I may be chronologically out of order, but I think, Louis McFadden was an early adopter, and also what's his name, the famous pilot, who his father, Lindbergh's father was aware early. There were people aware of it, but yeah, Ezra Pound was literally one of the first.
Yeah, and you know, his great crime of treason was that he was living in Mussolini's Italy. And he was quite enthralled with the system that Mussolini had created. And, so he was actually living there. And then when the war broke out, he started doing radio broadcasts on shortwave radio just sort of give the other side of the story to the people. And he did broadcasts about bankers and how they use central banking to take over the world. And when he was first captured by the Allies, he was basically tortured. He was made to stay in a cage outside in Italy during the summer and basically just be in an open cage for like several months. It almost killed him before they shipped him back to the States.
Oh, wow. I traced my roots in 1979 when I was 19 years old, and I lived a summer in Sicily, and when the Sciroccos are coming in, that was like 110, 120 every day. And because water was so scarce, they would turn off the water during the day and it would only run at night. So everybody would fill their urns and fill their whatever. And then they'd turn it off again. So you had to be to just be in a cage. I can't even imagine that poor guy. Yeah.
Yeah. And the guy, you know, he was... Ezra Pound is the kind of intellectual there aren't many people like anymore. And if you read some of his writings, the guy was just off the chart genius, absolute genius. And he spent 13 years at St. Elizabeth's Mental Hospital, I believe in Virginia or somewhere in D.C., somewhere right around there.
Well, Pound had a series of acolytes, right? He was the mentor, and Eustace Mullins is the least known. Better known are... Hemingway and then the Irish writer, I can't think of his name, but he was a heavy hitter in mentoring these giants of literature.
You're absolutely right. He was. You're right. And Eustace Mullins was actually the least well-known by far. There was a whole crew, I don't have the names in front of me, of
maybe
people
James
that,
Joyce,
that he was mentoring that were very famous writers in their time. Absolutely.
Well, I know Hemingway was definitely one of them, and I think another was James Joyce, and holy cow, wow.
Yeah. And so, by doing radio shows about Mussolini's Italy, that was treason back then. Amazing. And pretty much ruined his life. He did go back to Italy after that, I believe.
Italy's a great place to live. I mean, it was, but now with the African hordes, it's probably not quite as good as it was.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, how Italy was the next state to want to try to break away from the EU because they were taking the brunt of these people sailing across the little channel there from Libya that which was created by the UN and or NATO for no reason, essentially, right? I mean, destroyed a whole country. Oh, now we got hordes of immigrants coming into your country. Nothing we can do about it. It's just incredible.
Here we go.
Oh, here we are at the top of the hour. We'll be right back with Joe Olson. Okay, you guys stay tuned. Okay, we're back for hour number two of Operation Scorpio. I'm here with Giuseppe, and we've been having a conversation about a whole bunch of stuff, man. And I guess now we're going to get ready to bring on Joe Olson, who I'm sure many of you have heard interviewed before, talking about 9/11 and other things that he's researched into quite deeply. So that said, Joe, are you there, sir?
We're calling him right now. There he is.
Bonsoir, hello, Joe. Monsieur.
Hey, Joe Olson.
Yes.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for coming on the show. Really good to talk with you, sir.
Yeah. Where are you going with that gun in your hand? As Jimi Hendrix would say. We're kind of winging it today. There's a rally for the 51%ers, which in Texas, the governor is having a lot of pushback from sheriffs who don't want to enforce any of the mandates, which is the lockdown, masks, contact tracing, social distancing, and mandatory vaccines. So the sheriffs have said they're not going to participate in any of that. And there's 254 counties in Texas, and over half of the sheriffs have already said, we don't have time for that. We've got real crimes to solve and real people needs to serve. So his enforcement agency has been the Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission, which inspects liquor stores and bars and nightclubs. And they have 650 licensed law officers in their organization. And they're the ones that are doing the enforcement. They've been running around shutting down bars, fining owners, canceling licenses. And so everybody's trying to jump through hoops to come through some kind of way of getting around this draconian fascist government dictates. So today in Fort Worth, there's one of the bar owners that's having a press conference at 2:00. So we're doing something unique for me. I've never done a live press conference. So this will be interesting. But if it works good today, there's going to be a huge event in Austin next weekend. And this is by the Constitutional Summit USA.com. So you can Google that and go online. And if we can put it in show notes, that would be great. They've got speakers featuring Del Bigtree, several of the frontline American doctors that did a big press conference in front of the Supreme Court about a month ago. Several state senators will be speaking, and it should be a really great event. Starts at 9 in the morning, lasts till 5. Yes.
What's the URL again? Constitutional what?
I'll email it to you.
Oh, well, I'm typing it in right now.
Oh, okay. ConstitutionalSummitUSA.com.
Okay. All right, cool. That's great. It is dictatorial, and it's incredible how people are losing their business by government edict, not because of their own poor business skills, but because the government is bringing in agents and forcing people not to do business. And, you know, if people want to walk around with a mask on and, you know, put a tampon up their backside for extra protection, that's fine with me. But to mandate that and force others to do it is the definition of insanity.
Well, look at it this way. In the land of opportunity, 40 million Americans are non-essential. What that is so outrageous to even make that claim, it's beyond absurd. And it's all run by the medical mafia, which is all owned by the banking cartels, which own the military-industrial complex, the news media. They've monopolized virtually every seat of power in the world. Like I like to say, there's the four horsemen of the apocalypse, disease, famine, pestilence, and war. And the powers that be own all four of those horsemen, and they've been releasing them constantly, and now they're down to the end game. Either they're going to get caught and hung like they should be, or they're going to go ahead and pull off the greatest coup in the history of the planet and destroy civilization, kill 90% of humanity. That's where they want to take us. And the amazing thing is that every epiphany is permanent. And so, you know, I'm going out every day causing as many epiphanies as possible. Right now, I'm outside the parking lot of Rail Club Live, which is a music venue in Fort Worth. And at 2 o'clock, they're opening the doors for a rally. And supposedly they've got a major lawsuit against the governor of Texas, which is being pulled off in multiple jurisdictions. I sent you an article on that that had three different states that were outlined in that article.
Wow, Joe, you said something really profound there, that every epiphany is permanent. That is so true. And the more we can all try to help others have an epiphany, it's going to change the world. And the other point you made that this really is for all the marbles. It's all or nothing. Either these people are hanged in the street or they're going to pull off the biggest coup in the history of the world. And there's really not much in between, is there?
No. They've got a planned mass extinction event, and that's us. They want to exterminate us. They hate all life on planet, which is why when you get to the pestilence part, pestilence includes all of the food toxins that they give us, like chlorine and fluoride, which I cover in my articles, which we'll get to in a minute. The genetically modified food products that they produce and monopolize, chemtrails, the whole the 5G and the electromagnetic background pollution that we're subject to, nuclear testing, all of that falls in the category of pestilence. Disease, they've been trying to prevent disease vectors on humanity for centuries. And it's very provable if you read the book Plague of Corruption and you watch the two videos. One of them is PlandemicMovie.com, which is an interview with Dr. Judy Mikovits, PhD virologist who worked under Fauci for 30 years and knows where all of his ugly skeletons are buried. And then they did a follow-up 90-minute long video where she does about a 30-minute segment in there. And then it's got other people that are very knowledgeable on these scams. And that's called Plandemic 2, Indoctrination. And I don't have the website on that, but it'll be easy enough to Google search and bring that up. All of these have been banned by YouTube. All of James Fetzer's work has been banned by YouTube. We just kind of jumped into it without any real background. For the new listeners we've got, I'm a retired engineer, trained in structural engineering, worked in mechanical, electrical, and plumbing, and structural, civil, subdivision developments, worked in 20 different states. I've started doing major online articles on global warming in 2009 with my first post at InfoWars in April of that year. And then in May of that year, they had a press conference for Richard Gage, founder of Architects and Engineers for 911 Truth, in Austin with Alex Jones. It was a four-hour-long press conference. I got there an hour early, reviewed the structural drawings for World Trade Centers 1, 2, and 7, witnessed all the documentaries of the known controlled demolition side by side with the demolitions of the three buildings that fell, plus the Building 6, which was turned into a nuclear volcano. I didn't want to write about 911 because I didn't want to taint, you know, the tinfoil hat issue with being behind every conspiracy on the planet. So I didn't write about it speak publicly about it until Veterans Today ran a series, probably about 24 articles on nuclear education beginning in May of 2014. And then by March of 2015, I'd read enough material from Veterans Today. I'd reviewed the FEMA information, the NIST information, the 911 commission report, and, you know, used common sense and decades of engineering training to debunk the official narrative 100%. So I did an interview with Dr. Fetzer called Unequivocal 911 Nukes. It was posted at about 10 different websites with an average of 10,000 views each. So there was 100,000 people that got their epiphany there. You can only be lied to by somebody you trust. And so all you have to do is show that these people are proven liars and don't trust them. And then suddenly they have far less power over people than they had previously. And so that's where we're going with the truth movement. Went on to do a article for Robert David Steele in a submission that he made to Donald Trump in August of 2018. And that article is Twin Towers Destroyed Using Clean Nukes. And then I was invited to do my third two-hour guest interview on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. And I never turned George down. He's a great interviewer. And it's an enormous exposure, 615 radio stations with 2 million listeners and probably hundreds of thousands in their YouTube listings after the fact. So it's a tremendous audience to be involved in. So that was going to be on August 1st of 2019. And so I thought maybe they would want to discuss the 911 issues because they had previously interviewed Dr. Judy Wood several times and Richard Gage several times. So I wrote an article with the same title as my Fetzer interview, Unequivocal 911 Nukes, posted it at principaaustralia.org, and I got a reply from one of my readers, said, Olson, you need to check out Heinz Palmer, P-O-M-M-E-R, at 911history.de, and he's got some really interesting information. So I pulled up that website. It's done by four physicists, one from France, two from Germany, and one from Denmark. And they released their material. I looked at it and went, oh, my God, a 5,000-word article on the exact sequence of destruction of the Twin Towers, along with 40 PowerPoint slides describing each segment in series, and then three 90-minute videos which explained what happened during the event. So even if you can't fill in the blanks reading the 5,000 words and looking at the 40 PowerPoint slides, you can listen to the three audios, rewind them as many times as necessary, and you can answer all your questions. One of the points that he brought up was that iron had four stable isotopes. Well, being an A student in chemistry in college, it was like, if it's got four stable, how many radioactive isotopes does it have? Well, it's got 24. Well, that means that iron works as a gamma sink. So if you set off a gamma ray bomb in the basement of the building, iron will absorb quite a bit of those gamma rays. Well, what are the other building materials? Well, the other principal building material would be concrete. So what are the elements that make up concrete? That would be carbon, silicon, and calcium. Well, together, those four elements have 98 isotopes. The bomb was placed on granite bedrock, which also contains phosphorus and sodium. And when you add those two, you add another 40 available isotopes. So now you've got a building that just the building materials have 150, roughly, available isotopes to absorb an enormous amount of gamma radiation and then give it off as low-level radiation later, which would do a lot to hide your signature, but it also meant that you need to immediately get all of the iron and concrete dust out of those holes and shipped off to China so that nobody can actually analyze the levels of isotopes to prove this is what you did. And that's where we can...
Right, you know, that really does make sense. You know, it all fits together in a way, because thought it was strange how they... Let's get rid of all the evidence as quickly as possible. Let's ship it all up to China as fast as we can. And it also explains why there would have been this molten lava, essentially, that was for months underneath the rubble.
The last couple of PowerPoint slides show giant track hoes that these things they can reach up 3-4 stories high. The hoe part of it, and they're on giant tracks sitting on top of a 100-foot deep crater where you can see the igneous rock burnt into the 1,000-foot of granite that was underneath those buildings. There was 40 feet of glacial till that was dropped when the last ice age ended on top of Manhattan Island, and it's sitting on top of 40 feet of bedrock. Well, when they got ready to build the World Trade Center buildings, they knew they had the granite, but you couldn't penetrate the granite without doing blasting, and the Hudson River is only 15 feet below ground level at Manhattan. So if you start, you dig, excavate all the way down to where the granite is, and then you start blasting the granite, you shake that loose fill of glacial rocks and dirt, and next thing you know, the Hudson River washes into the hole, fills up all of Manhattan, and you've flooded every utility tunnel and every subway in all of New York. So they couldn't go any deeper than 40 feet with the original construction. That's where the foundation was set, was on bedrock. When you use the bedrock as a lens for a plasma bomb, it carves a hole underneath all three of those buildings. You can look at Building 7, Building 1 and 2, and you can see the hole that it carved underneath and that's what push those radioactive isotopes into the granite, and the granite is still radioactive, which is why they put reflecting ponds at all three sites where the major hole was, because water also absorbs gamma rays, and it also absorbs heat, and it gives off the heat as vaporization off the top of the water surface, and so you see the ponds steaming in the middle of winter. Well, you know, we've seen ponds steam in the winter anyway, because the air temperature drops down a lot quicker than the pond, and then so the pond gets off steam. It does the same thing with this nuclear energy, and that's why they had to build reflecting ponds in front of those three buildings. Every piece of the puzzle fits together. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, it really does. Now, I want to ask you a question. If you could please elaborate a little bit on these high-tech plasma, I believe you said, nuclear bombs. Because the one thing that I've always wondered about is why was there no flash that we usually associate with, you know, a nuclear bomb?
Okay, there was one elevator shaft. There's 50 vertical elevator shafts in the two twin towers. There was one shaft that went all the way down to bedrock and was the only one that was open continuous from basement level 6 up to the 110th level penthouses. That was elevator number 50, which is right in the center of the building. Each one of those elevator shafts was surrounded by concrete, and then there was also three vertical stairway shafts that went to the top floor. All of those were surrounded by concrete. That works as a perfect gamma ray funnel for absorbing the gamma rays coming up out of the ground, and then it also allows the core of the building. You have three things that cause destruction of buildings. One of them is detonation velocity, which I go into in my article, Unequivocal 911 Nukes. The other one is thermal, and then the third would be gamma ray, where you can hit it with gamma rays and just bust the molecules completely apart. So part of it was destruction by gamma rays, busting the iron and steel and concrete molecules apart and turning them to dust. part of it was vaporization of those materials, and part of it was detonation velocity. For concrete, it's 3,200 meters per second. For steel, it's 6,100 meters per second. And the maximum velocity ever recorded for thermite is 895 meters per second. So there's no way that these buildings were brought down with thermite. Thermite was used as cutting charges in certain locations in the building, and that's obvious from the debris pattern. But it was not done principally by thermite, and the volume of thermite and the fusing required to link all that stuff and have it come off simultaneously on three buildings flawlessly is astronomical. You're talking thousands of tons of material that had to be carefully placed and carefully coordinated and carefully fused to go off in sequence, or you could put a 300-pound bomb in the basement of the building and pull the trigger and the whole thing falls just exactly like it fell. So,
Joe,
that's that. Yes.
Your level of scientific and technical knowledge is just amazing. You're like a forensic, a heretical forensic investigator. But I would like to ask you, much the way the Kennedy assassination occurred at the highest levels of power, who actually did 9/11?
Well, interestingly enough, there was a 911 Austin Truth Rally in Austin on the 15th anniversary of 9/11, which was a Sunday, September 11th, 2016. One of the speakers was Ron Avery, who is a colleague with Dr. Fetzer and I, and he lives in the Austin area, and he's going to be one who's doing the major coordination for the Question Everything conference, which we'll get to in a minute. The other notable speaker was Jim Mars, who is investigative reporter, well, probably the most renowned investigative reporter in Texas history. And then the third major speaker was Christopher Bolin, and he had a book called Solving 9/11, which I got a copy of, and he signed it. And he does an excellent job of explaining the Mossad portion of that conspiracy, but he doesn't really play the CIA and the MI6 and HCGQ portion of it from England. Because all roads actually lead back to Rothschild, and so Mossad is just one of his little groups of Caligliani's that do the snuff jobs for him. So,
well,
so basically,
you're not mentioning the traitor Dick Cheney.
Oh yeah, he was the ringleader on it. Yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah, because Baby Bush probably didn't know any of the specifics until he was reading My Pet Goat. And then somebody said, hey, guess what? Your pet goat just ate three buildings. And it was like, oh, okay. Well, I've got to go hide in the bunker somewhere. Yeah.
I got to go hide in the bunker, man. It's too dangerous. Yeah. I remember that. And you know, the other thing that's interesting about the nuke theory that really resonates with me is that it really sort of, you know, takes the number of suspects down to a pretty low level. It probably wasn't Mogadishu or Somalia or Venezuela. And well, there's what, maybe six countries in the world that would even have access to that kind of high-tech nuclear mini nuke weapons.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It limits it to state players that probably a half dozen worldwide. And Russia and China had no vested interest in getting us involved in wars in the Middle East. Most of the people in the Middle East didn't have any advantage in doing that. So it pretty, other than our favorite little group of few that say they're the chosen ones, and that group definitely had an advantage in doing this because they claimed it ahead of time. Netanyahu wrote a book in 95 about how if we didn't address world terrorism, they were going to destroy the Twin Towers. Well, how is he so prescient that he could predict that 6 years in advance? The day after it happened, he said it was a great thing for Israel. Well, I'm sorry. Sometimes a great thing for Israel is not a great thing for the rest of humanity.
It was tragic, but it's a good thing for Israel. Right. I remember that. In the chat room is asking about the toasted cars. Could you address, like, how would a nuclear weapon create the toasted cars? That's, you know, Judy Woods, one of her thing was the toasted cars, and that the DEW somehow caused the toasted cars. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, if you've got a building that's made out of a steel grid where you have 16-inch square box girders, 30 inches on center, all the way up the vertical exterior of the building, those are joined with a 52-inch high, 2-inch thick steel plate that's called a spandrel section, which is where your floor joists weld into. And that forms your membrane on each floor, and that's what resists your vertical, your horizontal loads from wind loading for 120-mile-an-hour hurricanes, which there was 5 hurricanes that hit the Twin Towers before the nuclear bombs hit them. So they didn't lose a window pane, which indicates that the buildings are fairly substantial. You got a lot more force on 5 acres of vertical wall surface at 120-mile-an-hour winds than you do from a jet airplane. So, and then the jet fuel can't possibly burn the steel. UL did a 24-hour-long test with a forced draft kerosene combustion continuous under a 24-inch bar joist loaded to the same structural floor loading as the bar joist in the Twin Towers, and they couldn't measure a fraction of an inch of deflection after continuous burn for 24 hours. So any claims that those portions of the building sagged and caused the building to cave in is completely bogus.
Okay, we're at the bottom of the hour already. Everyone stay tuned. Okay, we're back here on Operation Scorpio. And I'm talking with Joe Olson, structural engineer and a man that's done an incredible amount of research into 9/11, as well as this climate change agenda that sort of hooks into the COVID agenda. Interesting how that works. And I'm also here with, of course, my co-host, Giuseppe. Joe, I just wanted to clarify. So you're saying that the radiation possibly started those cars on fire? Or if you could just go back there just for a second, just to clarify.
Well, go to the Veterans Today article, Breathtaking Solving Nuclear 911. And he explains all that in depth. What happens is you've got enormous amount of gamma rays, alpha rays, X-rays showering up through the core of the building and then shooting out through the egg grater surface or cheese grater surface of the building through the holes that are between the steel. The steel is absorbing a lot of it, but then you got patterns where it's coming through. And that's where you would get the waveguide cutoffs where you have a front half of the car that's singed and burned, and then the back half, the paint's not even charred on it. And you have pieces of paper floating around sitting on top of the burnt car that are not burned. And so that can all be explained with nuclear radiation. We've done 2,500 nuclear tests since Trinity in 1945. Probably double or triple that if you actually knew all the underground testing that's gone on. So we know exactly how this stuff affects every one of the materials that was surrounding the World Trade Center building. What Dr. Woods says, and I agreed with her on her calculation of the mass of the buildings, and I agreed with her on her calculation of the amount of energy necessary to break apart the components of the building and level it. What I don't agree with her is that it was remote directed energy weapon. It was directed energy, but it was set on the granite underneath the building and then focused up through the core of the building, dissolving the center core of the building, which is where your floor joists are connected. And that would cause the center portions of the floor to fall down, which would pull the outside walls down in sequence. So then it just became like a house of cards falling in on itself, and everything was falling down into a molten crucible down underneath that was melting the steel and ionizing and melting the granite, and it carved a hole. if you look at the photos and you go through the sequence of the PowerPoint slides at the breathtaking Solving 911 article, it's completely obvious. Now, here's the problem. The unpunished terrorists from 911 are the same SOBs that are pulling the WooFlu scam on us. And I've written 6 really good articles that are at principascientific.org. And that's PRINCIPIA-scientific.org. This is a UK-based group that I'm co-founder of. And we do publications and we do a daily newsletter and we promote nothing but truth and things that could be possible truths. So we don't get into wild speculation about anything, but we do show enormous amount of proofs. My interest in pandemics came from an early age. My grandmother lost her mother, father, and 10-year-old brother in 1 week's period of time in 1918. So she was really a big believer in vaccines, which I always questioned. But she never made a point about being an orphan. And so I was always curious about how that one pandemic was just so much worse than anything else we'd had in the last 500 years. And a friend of mine sent me a book about 25 years ago called The Great Influenza by John M. Barry. It's 450 pages long, has a 50-page bibliography, which if you want to know how to tell if a book is full of truth, check the bibliography section. So anyhow, I started reading the book with certain preconceived notions about what had happened and what the causes were. And about 3/4 of the way through the book, I went, man, this is turning out to be so much different than what I thought. I've misinterpreted the whole first 3/4 of the book because I didn't understand where this thing was going. I've read thousands of history and science books since college, had a collegiate professor's level understanding, and it's the only book that I got to the last sentence and turned around and reread twice cover to cover without putting it down. It was that dramatic. Turns out that the 1918 flu was the extremely common H1N1 virus, which had popped up in 1895, 1918, 1955, and again in 1969. It's no more virulent than any other strain of influenza. When they published the human genome in 2003, everybody was like, oh, this is great. Now we can start having genetically modified drugs, like we really need that, like your immune system is so crippled after millions of years of evolution that it just can't limp along without having pharmaceutical assistance. What a load of crap. But anyhow, they also went out and dug up soldiers that they knew had died of the Spanish flu and isolated the virus, and it turned out it was the common H1N1. They were thinking, boy, if we could bring us up, this would be the perfect biological weapon, because that's what these clowns do. They want gain of function on everything, and they want to destroy as much life on this planet as possible so they can create their – yes.
That's exactly right, gain of function. People don't realize that $500 billion, that's a T, $500 billion annually is spent by the United States federal government in research of bioweapons, and that's only the U.S. So then factor in China, Russia, Great Britain. It's so beyond satanically evil, I don't even know what to say. But my question for you is, I was listening. I really like this woman. Her name is Dr. Sherry Rogers. I've purchased several of her books. She was a typical allopathic MD, and she was going down quick. She had a cholesterol count of 500, and she had all these maladies. And she was like, these drugs are not helping me. Anti-statin, cholesterol. She felt she was dying, so she like stepped back and said, "I've got to redo my entire life." And she's a brainiac, and she researched all this science and all these papers, and she made the determination, the correct determination, that nutrition was going to save her. And so she weaned herself off like 20 different medications. And in the span of the last 20 years, she's incredibly healthy now. Cholesterol's normal. Everything's normal. I think she's about like 79 years old. But if you hear her interviewed on the Power Hour, she's a regular on that really cool radio show. She sounds like she's 40 years old. It's just amazing. But the point being is she made the following statement that the true criminality of the pharmaceutical industrial complex is that it has actually mutated the patients like 20 times over, and they intentionally are doing that. What are your thoughts about that?
Oh, absolutely. You know, amazing. The CDC, who's supposed to be protecting the world from diseases, actually shipped over six different biological weapon agents to Saddam Hussein before we overthrew him. So then we could turn around and say, well, we know he's got weapons of mass destruction because we sent them to him. Well, we don't want to tell him that part of it. It's like they sent him anthrax and smallpox and other weaponized disease vectors, sent them directly to his bio research labs and said, you know, here's, and probably gave him the instructions. Here's how you can do gain of function on these yourself. These people are just absolutely ruthless. They can't compete with freedom and creativity of the human mass population. So we're just going to destroy the population, create a world of slaves where we are the smartest people on the planet. And we don't have to put up with all these upstarts that, you know, want to have opportunity and free enterprise and, you know, private property and free speech and all the other things that are going to expose the feudalist system that we want to impose. So anyhow, that first article I wrote there was Plandemics Are Personal, which goes into a bunch of the cofactors that John M. Barry missed in his great influenza book. And then I went to a rally. You can tell I'm near the airport. And I think that was a jet fighter. I'm in Fort Worth.
That was so definitely a fighter.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, it was no Learjet. Yeah, it is a fighter. He's just coming over the other way.
Well, yeah, you better duck and cover there, Joe.
Well, they haven't dropped any sidewinders on me yet. So then I attended Remember the Alamode rally in Dallas on May 9th. And this is to honor Shelley Luther, the woman who got thrown in jail for 7 days because she cut hair 2 days before the governor said she could. And speakers at that included Yvette Lozano, who's an MD from the Dallas area, who had treated all of her staff and dozens of her patients with hydrochloroquine. And she was saying, if you've got 100% preventative and a 99.9% cure, you don't have to wait for a vaccine. You don't have to do double-blind tests on it. You know it works. It's based on quinine, which is used by South American natives for 1,000 years before Columbus got here, and it's been used by Europeans for over 500 years. It's an over-the-counter drug in Mexico, Central and South America, all of Africa, and all of the Far East because it's antiviral, but it's also anti every other virus. So it's used for malaria, but it also works on lupus, chronic fatigue syndrome, arthritis, a whole range of things. And so the state licensing board came after her and threatened to pull her license. Well, one of the other speakers was State Senator Bob Hall, former U.S. Air Force captain, graduate electrical engineer. I've talked with him in person probably 30 minutes on the 911 information, and he says, well, your stuff makes a lot more sense than anything the government said, but I don't know there's anything we can do about it. I went, ha ha. You wait, Senator. We will do something about this. And then the third major speaker there, besides Shelley Luther, was Colonel Alan West, U.S. Army retired, former representative, three terms in Florida before they rhinos in Congress redistrict him out of his own district so that he couldn't run, and he moved to Texas. He is now the chairman of the state GOP. So after that event, I had also previously attended an InfoWars rally in Austin at the state capitol on April 18th. And then a week later, there was a Open Texas rally in Austin. And then following the rally at Dealey Plaza, there was a rally 2 weeks later in Austin for Oath Keepers. And at that event, I got to meet Dale Bigtree and talk with him for about 10 minutes. I actually did a on-air interview, but it was just for background purposes. They haven't called me back, and I haven't found it posted anywhere. So I
Joe, you made an interesting point about hydrochloroquine, and I just found it strange that, you know, the governor of Nevada, and I believe one other governor, actually forbid the use of hydrochloroquine, actually made a, like an edict from his throne that you can't use hydrochloroquine. And if people are really dropping like flies and we're having to step over bodies on the sidewalk, as they tell us, you'd think that, you know, why not give hydrochloroquine a shot?
Well, if you're trying to sell a $4,500 per treatment dosage of remdesivir from one of the medical mafias, then you don't want to have a $20 preventative that keeps you from getting sick. So, and I go into this in depth in all of my articles. I've got, like I said, six articles at Principia Scientific. The next article is Last Waltz Across Texas, which is the destruction of every nightclub, dance hall, live music venue, and actually every live band in the state of Texas because of the actions of this fascist governor that we've got. And then I got some information on what one of the companies called Novavax was doing with their vaccine. Now, a virus doesn't eat, drink, poop, mate, party, nothing. All it does is it floats around in a host, which is usually a bacteria, and the bacteria is really tiny, but the viruses are so small, you could have 1,000 viruses inside a single living bacteria cell, and when your immune system breaks open the bacteria cell, presto, you got a busload of viruses floating around in your system. Well, our immune system knows how to cope with these things, and we have a brilliant immune system that it's adapted to a very hostile environment on a number of fronts, which would be chemical, biological, radiological, you know, death threats from predators. I mean, we have an immune system that keeps us away from all these different threat vectors. Well, what the virus does is it hijacks the meiosis process in the cell, and it injects its DNA into the cell and then uses the cell's reproductive capability to produce more viruses. The issue is that it also absorbs a little bit of host DNA. So if you're trying to grow a mass vaccination for, say, flu, and you've isolated a flu strain, and you inject that into a living tissue, typically they're done in fertilized chicken eggs. Well, every chicken egg has slightly different DNA, which means that every vaccine you produce is going to be slightly different. So you're trying to hit a moving target with a moving artillery piece. And even though we've got guns on our tanks that can actually shoot at a target while they're moving and the target's moving, it's not as simple as that when you're talking in a biological system with something that's 20 microns across.
Well, Joe, what's interesting is that Dr. Judy Mikovits is co-author of Plague of Corruption. Kent Heckenlively, the attorney, did some amazing investigative journalist work and traced the origin of chronic fatigue syndrome to the Los Angeles in the 1930s or 40s when the arrogance of the vaccine industry, which is just based on such shit. In fact, the proper metaphor for the vaccine industry is you take a brick of feces and you dry it, and then you keep building more bricks of feces until you have this great cathedral of shit, the vaccine industry. And so many people believe the lies now. But the point being that the arrogance back then was, well, we can put a mouse brain in a blender to create a better vaccine because our human immune system is superior to any animals and we will never get infected by whatever virus might exist in the mouse. And lo and behold, they tested the innovative vaccine by this arrogant buffoon, injected everyone at the then LA County Hospital, doctors and nurses, and I believe it was like somewhere around 140 or 340 doctors and nurses all developed chronic fatigue, every one of them, because of this tainted vaccine. And it's just the arrogance of these lowlifes, these pharmaceutical hitmen and women. It's just ridiculous. Are you familiar? Did you remember reading that part of the book? And it just continues to this day.
Yeah. You can't really identify a pathogen until you can actually see it and see what its genetic structure is and how it's different from other pathogens. And you know, it's difficult to predict how it's going to behave in the future. So anything that you do from projecting beyond that is absurd extrapolation. But they didn't isolate and visualize the first virus until they had the electron microscope. And the guy that did it was in 1931, and he got the Nobel Prize for it after World War II. So I think he was awarded the prize. You can look it up. Nobel Prize for discovering viruses. So anything that was produced prior to 1931 could not possibly have known what virus they were dealing with, what the levels of virus were in whatever culture they were manufacturing, or what the impurities were. Now, this is where we get back to the Spanish flu of 1918. The U.S. Army inducted a million troops to go fight in World War I, and these guys were all forced to take vaccinations. The vaccinations included smallpox, yellow fever, and typhoid. Well, they had no way of isolating the concoctions that they used to manufacture their vaccines. So they had no way of knowing what the dosages were. And they gave them three simultaneous, which is guaranteed to give you a cytokine storm because you've overloaded your immune system with so many viral agents at the same time. Your immune system just goes, puh. And so basically the U.S. soldiers that died because they were in unheated tents at Army induction stations, shipped on unheated rail cars, bivouacked on tops of the decks of freight liners that were shipping munitions to the war front, and then stationed in gas-filled trenches. I mean, it's absolutely absurd.
Right. And, you know, the other thing that's strange about this whole Spanish flu thing is they always quote this number that 50 million people died worldwide. And I don't see how they could have come up with those numbers, given that, you know, World War II was just wrapping up. And I just don't see how they had the ability to count 50 million people that died supposedly of this disease. What are your thoughts on those numbers?
Well, yeah, I question any number that any of these clowns come up with because, there again, you can only be lied to by somebody you trust, and I don't trust anything that they have to say. So getting back to the article that I wrote called Wu Flu at Warp Speed, which is the A in a circle that everybody uses for, like, addressing, that was published July 20th. The company Novavax is using insect cell culture for their $2 billion, 100 million dose allotment of vaccines that Donald Trump is pressing us to take. So here you have a company that's using insect cell cultures, we know it's going to absorb a little bit of insect DNA. And so what are these people doing? It's like, you don't have enough cockroach DNA in your body, so we're going to infect you with some. It's just absolutely preposterous. And the same thing, the AstraZeneca and now Johnson & Johnson's kicked in and Pfizer's. They, together, we've spent over $6 billion to get 300 million doses of what can only be described as voodoo, which gets me to my next article, The Right to Try Voodoo. Yeah, our government is so compassionate that in 2014, the Colorado legislature said, you know, there's therapies in the world that are proven effective that the FDA won't allow us to use because the medical monopoly doesn't want to lose their monopoly on tinctures that don't work, that only suppress symptoms. So they won't allow these products to be used in America, but we think they should be used in Colorado. Well, they passed it in 2014. Texas legislature introduced it as a bill in 2015. Big Pharma shut it down in Texas. They reintroduced it in 2017. Big Pharma shut it down in Texas. They introduced it nationally in 2018. It's called the Right to Try Act. And after the national government passed it, the legislature in Texas said, well, because we can't trust the federal government, they might change their mind on this. And because we're so compassionate that we voted this down twice, now we'll go ahead and pass the national law is a state law just in case the national law gets changed. Well, what is the right to try? You have the right to try what the FDA wants to have free human tests on. You can only get an FDA-approved drug through an FDA-approved supplier, through an FDA-approved doctor, all of which have complete immunity from criminal or civil liabilities for what they're doing. If they find something that works, they'll kill you and say it doesn't work because that's how monopolists roll. Then they've got a medicine cabinet of stuff they know that works that they can only issue to the elite, and the rest of us can continue to suffer with whatever maladies we've been forced to endure.
Okay, Joe, we're at the top of the hour here already, and so we'll pick this up after the break. We'll be right back. That went by quick. Stay tuned, everyone. Okay, we're back here on the final hour of
Hold
the
on,
Scorpio
Michael.
Show.
Be back
final
in a minute.
Hour.
I'm doing a live broadcast.
Hours have gone by very quickly. Joe, how are you? And
yes.
what's going on there in Texas now? What's your status?
Okay, I just went into the Rail Club Live to see the event, and there's probably 25 people in there now. There's probably twice that many behind the stage that are getting ready to come out as speakers. They're going to be doing this as a YouTube live broadcast on their channel, and I will get you a link to that so people can follow along. Basically, I've been told that they've got a high-powered lawyer that's got an impeccable lawsuit against the governor over the fascist lockdowns on the state. And to give you an idea how truly corrupt this whole thing is, the governor got money from the PPP fund from Trump, and he awarded a $295 million contract to a Google startup company called MTX for contact tracing everybody in the state of Texas. So here you have a governor that said that millions of Texans are non-essential, and then he's going to turn around and give a 39-year-old Pakistani with no provable education or business acumen who started a company in Texas 6 months ago, he gives them a $295 million contract to do something that, number one, we know won't work, and number two, is as fascist as anything you could possibly imagine. And that is to contact trace everybody in the state of Texas. They've already forced the apps onto all of your iPhones. My iPhone went blank about a week ago, and I went back to Verizon and said, hey, I can't get my phone to work. They went, oh, you need the new OS 10. It's like, what's that? And it's like, oh, this is the WooFlu tracking amp that we're going to add to
Wow.
Yeah. So that's how corrupt.
Unbelievable.
And
Joe, in this plan, how many contact tracers do they plan on hiring to do this?
Well, initially they were going to hire thousands of them, probably 10 or 15,000 to cover the state. But now they've decided they can do all this electronically because they're perfecting the facial recognition technology. And they're going to say, well, you walked through the grocery store yesterday and somebody sneezed on that aisle, so we need to come in and do a test on you. Well, the test, number one, are the ProMaze chain reaction test, the PCR, and it's not intended to isolate any particular type of virus, and it only works to tell you that a virus was present, and it only works by taking a tiny sample and then amplifying it over and over and over through a minimum of 20 generations, but they can go as many generations as they want to come up with a false positive. That's item number one. Number two, all of the test kits were ordered in 2017 and 2018 prior to there being any pandemic, and they're all manufactured in China, and they have false positives because you can take the test stick without ever using it, take it out of the test tube, immediately put it into the testing machine, and it will test positive because it was infected with viruses from the Chinese factory. So not only are you giving up your personal DNA by letting them do a nose swab, you're also infecting yourself with viruses that are contaminants inside the test kit itself.
So Joe and Scorpio, we've got a caller, Michael from North Carolina. Welcome to the Operation Scorpio, Michael. Do you have a question for Joe?
Hey, guys. This is a terrific discussion today. Joe, I am a new friend. Giuseppe and I are new friends as a result of working with Dr. James Fetzer on a weekday podcast. And so I'm on Fetzer's mailing list, too, and there was an email exchange this morning about 9/11 evidence. You probably remember it. And
yes.
Your name was on there. And so when I sat down to listen to this show and your name came up, I said, hey, wait a minute. I just got an email from that guy. And then on top of that, you're in Fort Worth, which is my hometown.
Oh, cowabunga. I love dancing in Fort Worth. I used to go to Guitars and Cadillac. I've been to Stagecoach, White Elephant, and Billy Bob's. But my favorite dance hall in the whole state of Texas is Cowboys Red River. And I called them this week knowing that I was going to be in Fort Worth, and it's a short hop to Dallas, and asking if they were open. They said, yeah, we've been open for about a month, because we put a food truck out front, which is one of the games that the governor's playing because he's getting a lot of pushback. So if you are a food service, you're not required to have 51% sale of food at your establishment. You can have 51% sales from alcohol, and you could still be open just by parking a barbecue or fajita truck in front of your business. So they opened a month ago, and I called them, and they said, well, we're operating at 75% capacity. Well, I've been there on nights when they had 1,000 people, and I can dance with 50 to 100 women in one night and make them all happy. So I said, well, hell with it. I'm overdue for dancing because this shutdown, I've only been able to go out dancing a couple of times since February in Texas. And that was my lifeblood. Yes.
So what is your hometown?
I live outside of Houston, but there's only two dance halls left open in the whole Houston area, and so I pretty much have to commute. The ones that I go to in San Antonio and Austin have shut down.
Well, okay, I just had one question and
go ahead.
One comment. Joe, when you first started talking, I thought that you mentioned something happening tomorrow in Fort Worth. And I still have a lot of friends and people on my mailing list from there, so I wanted to tell them about it.
Well, no, it's today, and it's at the Rail Club.
Okay.
Which is
I heard that. So all the info at the website that you directed us to is for the October 3rd event in Austin.
Right. And that's the one everybody should go to. It's 9 in the morning till 5 p.m. And if the weather's decent, go to Austin. If we could have 10,000 people on the streets of Austin, we'll get the attention. But even if we only have 1,000, it would be marvelous. The previous rallies
I can alert all my people still back in Texas. And my comment is, earlier in the show, you were talking about the radiation effects of what Judy Woods calls the toasted cars around Ground Zero.
Right.
And I'm sure you know this guy's work, Jeff Prager.
Yes. Jeff going to be one of the presenters. Yeah. He's going to be one of the presenters at Question Everything 2020 in Austin the first weekend in November.
Are you going to be there?
Yeah, yes, I'm going to be one of the speakers. I was going to be doing 911, and then we were going to have like a panel discussion afterwards. And then we were contacted about a month ago by Jeff Prager, and I reviewed his material, and I said, I need to bring this guy on as a co-host with me. What I didn't know is that all of the material that was produced by Heinz Palmer was written in German. And so all of the videotapes were in German, and Prager said that he found the material. He translated it, he put it in English, and then he did the voiceover dubs for the 3 90-minute videos, which I swear you would think that Palmer was speaking in English. But he said, no, he's got very, very limited English. Prager did all of the voiceovers for it. So, yeah, he's a tremendous source.
And
well, Joe, now that we've gotten back on 9/11 a little bit, I'd like to ask you a question. You know, I read Judy Woods' book. And in some ways, it was a very well done book. But of course, she gives no answers about who might have done 9/11. It might have been the Keebler elves. We just don't know. But, one of the other interesting things she brought up was building number 6 and how it's sort of, the roof was basically taken out. All the floors were taken out, but the outside of the building still stood. What are your thoughts on that phenomenon?
All you have to do is go to Breathtaking Solving Nuclear 911. They've got a thermographic image of the 911 site, which shows you where the hot spots are under all four of those buildings. And it shows Building 6, a 7-story tall rectangular building with a crater right in the middle of it. And that crater was right over where the gold bullion vault was that had $1 billion worth of gold that was looted prior to the 911 event. And the vault door was left open along with tracks showing where a forklift and a dump truck had come in and loaded $1 billion worth of gold and hauled it out the night before 911. So that's what happened.
Interesting. So the question might be, where did the gold go? Not only where did the towers go?
Where did the 43 tons of gold that Gaddafi had stashed in Libya to create the dinar, which was going to compete against the phony baloney euro and the phony baloney greenback and lift Africa and the Arab world out of poverty and debt slavery? Yeah, where did all that gold go? Oh, we know where it went. They drilled a 3-inch diameter test hole in Haiti, 60 feet deep, said they found gold, stationed a gold refining ship in the harbor, and Hillary Clinton's brother, one of the Rodham kids, got the contract, and he goes over there and suddenly smelts all these new gold ingots on that boat and then ships them off to Switzerland, and that was all the rinsing of the gold that they stole from Gaddafi. Oh, this whole thing is just so nightmarishly ugly, it's hard to believe. But the thing is, the truth all fits together, and like we've said before, every epiphany is permanent. Wake the hell up, and then they can't lie to you anymore. So then
Joe,
we can start rebuilding a world on truth. Yes.
I have a question. As a structural engineer, and clearly you're a savvy man when it comes to the nuts and bolts of things, how long did it actually take to wire Building 7 and to insert the charges, some of them nuclear, into the Twin Towers? I mean, we've seen the pictures of the Israeli art students who seem to be putting charges in the shape of a plane. And we've seen that the Bush brother got the elevator repair contract. And we've heard Larry Silverstein, Lucky Larry, talk about how we decided to pull it, which means the entire building had to be wired for controlled demolition, implosion. How long did that all take?
Well, that's the beauty of using a nuclear plasma busting bomb. You can put a 300-pound bomb in the building and bring down almost any building. The only thing that you need to do is you need to augment it with some satchel charges in the right locations to blow a hole in the wall and make it look like a plane hit it, and to do thermite cuts on some of the big plate girders at the bottom of the building to direct the material they're cut at a 45 degree angle on the same plane, which is not a common failure plane for the steel girders. But when you have that cut, it directs everything down into the center of the building. So there was some amount of pre-planning of explosives and thermite charges, but you couldn't have done the whole building that way. And you couldn't do it with multiple nuclear devices because you can't control them. When they're in a nuclear environment, you'll cook off one nuclear weapon and then you'll cook off all the rest of them, which is why they abandoned the W-54 Davy Crockett bazooka and the 155-millimeter nuclear artillery shells that we developed, because once you fire one, then you have to wait hours for the radiation level to drop down before you can pull the next shell out without it setting itself off behind the lines. So they realized that multiple nukes, and this is part of the military FM-101 that I have listed in my unequivocal 911 nukes article, along with fourth-generation nuclear weapons by Gosler.
Well, Joe, do you think that Building 7 was taken down with a mini-nuke or traditional explosives? Because it seemed like a very different explosion than the two main towers.
Well, the construction was different, and then there was no injury to the building, so they had to come up with a different hypothesis. But, yes, they used a series of charges, but you would only have to do the core of the building because the whole rest of the building is going to pull in on itself once you set off the nuclear device. And you have the Richter scale seismic material, which is also in the Heinz Palmer material at Veterans Today. So anybody that's a serious student about this, you could spend days going over all the material and cross links to the material that's presented at Veterans Today. Trust me, I read every one of their 80 articles as it was produced. And like I said, I was an A student in college chemistry for engineering, which is sophomore level chemistry. You have to place out of freshman level because they don't want to give you credit for kitchen chemistry. So I had also studied an enormous amount of nuclear weapons, nuclear power plants, and natural nuclear fission, which is one of the variables that causes climate change, is that we have a giant nuclear furnace underneath our feet, which produces elemental atoms and enormous amount of heat. And like we mentioned before, a pound of uranium is equivalent to a million pounds of TNT. Well, we're standing on a planet with an estimated 800,000 cubic miles of uranium and 1.2 million cubic miles of thorium. And all of those are subject to decay. All of the elements around them are subject to decay. And one of the items that they brought up in the Veterans Today article was that under high heat and pressure, approximately 50,000 atmospheres, which occurs a little over 40 miles deep on the planet, every member of the metallic series on the periodic table is fissionable. And so when you add in all of those metallic elements being fissioned under high heat and pressure, then that's what causes the ground to be hot. That's what causes earthquakes, causes plate tectonics and volcanoes. And those are not controlled by the amount of carbon dioxide that humans put in the air.
Well, thank God that Lucky Larry had a dermatologist appointment the morning of 9/11, because he usually had breakfast every morning at the
Windows of the World
restaurant at the top.
Yeah. I'm glad he got his Botox treatment so he could smile real big for the camera. Yeah, what a dirty bastard he is.
Yeah,
I'm telling to his face. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. And it's like he's a criminal and he walked away with what, billions of dollars on a pretty shaky, investment with insurance. Incredible.
Oh, yeah. He only invested like $20 million and he got $4.5 billion back. That's a pretty good return on investment. But the real irony was
bad.
he managed to talk the insurance companies into giving double indemnity. So you have a building that's worth $1 million each. $1 billion each, and you insure them each for $2 billion if they're destroyed by terrorists. They can be destroyed by anything else. You'd only get $1 million, but if they're destroyed by terrorists, you get $2 million. Now, what loony? Oh, we know who it was. It was AIG, but AIG didn't cover it in the insurance. They were just the underwriter, and then they sold it to everybody else. They sold it to all the other companies because they said, oh, we've got this thing. It's too big for us to handle, so we're going to split it between a bunch of different insurance companies. And all of those insurance companies had short sales on Wall Street of their stock because they knew they were fixing to take a hit. Same thing with the airlines. American and United Airlines had short sales on them. So this whole thing, these dirty racketeers.
I think we lost Joe.
Yeah, we lost Joe. We'll have to call him back.
Oh, here he is.
He was getting. That's interesting time that his phone cut off, though. all right,
Let's
that
see.
Was very
He's
interesting.
Still here, Michael.
Yeah, I was going to.
You're
ask,
still here.
I was going to ask what the ethnicity was of the CEO of AIG. But
I think he was South Korean, Mike.
South Korean.
Oh, was he? All right.
Yeah.
All right. That sounds good. Is Joe back yet? Well, basically,
I'm calling him now.
The reason I brought up Prager earlier was that I thought.
Oh, okay, I think Joe is back on. Joe, are you there?
Go ahead, Mike.
Yes.
Mike was asking about Prager. Go ahead, Michael. Finish your question.
I was just saying that the main reason that I brought up Prager's work earlier was that he just did about an hour and a half with Fetzer, maybe it was 2 hours about a month ago, and I thought he was especially good with explaining the molecular chemistry, if you will, or interaction of ionizing radiation with the steel seen in cars around Ground Zero, and why
right.
some of that steel was demolished and other parts of the car were not at all.
Right. Right. Yeah, I did review his interview with Fetzer, and I have no issues at all with the material that Prager's presented. Now, the 28 authors that were presenting to Robert David Steele in the memo to the president, that's at tinyurl911-potus, POTUS, I have a discrepancy with four of those authors just outright. I just don't trust what they're doing. And so anyhow, I'm walking back in. It looks like we've got a local news crew that's out here covering. And it looks like we've got some folks that are coming back on for the event. And here's one guy that's organized it. His name is Chris. Chris.
How you doing,
sir? Oh, great. I'm doing a live radio interview.
Awesome. Okay.
With Rebel Radio.
Okay.
And so I'm just going to be kind of wandering around. And see if we can pick up.
Absolutely. Come on in.
Okay. Bless you. Hey, we're fixing to go in.
Okay. I'll let you guys go.
I'll
take
you in to get you a wristband. He's with the press.
Okay.
Awesome. Yeah. Can you hear me? Sorry, I'm doing 19.
Okay.
Well, as Joe enters the rally, we've Michael Ivey has left the conversation, and soon, if anyone else would like to join, please telephone 703-879-8880 or Skype to Dolphin_Dave to be brought in directly on Skype. We welcome and invite you to join the conversation.
Yeah. And, we're hitting some interesting details here about 9/11. And I guess now Joe is entering into the live event, and maybe we'll pick up some interesting conversations from there as well.
Well, Dave, what's so ridiculous about this whole enslavement initiative that's going on in Texas is if you look at Sweden as the proper model for how this scamdemic should have been handled, they let the bug work through like every other flu and cold season where most of the deaths were comorbidity.
Chris knows me.
Where people were going to die anyway of lung issues like chronic obstructive pulmonary disorder or heart failure or kidney disease or diabetes or cancer or what have you. And they were going to catch some type of cold, flu, pneumonia anyway. That's how a lot of them pass. And for it to all be listed as COVID-19, and I saw a video yesterday from Sweden, it's all back to normal. This is such a ridiculous, disgusting scam. And what Joe, the rally they're at, I mean, it's hard for me to believe a free freedom state like Texas, that Republican governor is still going along with the globalist agenda to wear masks and do slave training. It just is mind-boggling to me that Texas is one of the states to align with the parasites like Newsom in California and that big, tall beast in Michigan and Fredo Cuomo in New York and the coward in Pennsylvania. Those are all Democrats. And here, this is a rhino, evidently, in Texas, because I would have thought Texas would be a leader in freedom.
Well, you know, I lived in Texas for a few years when I was young, and that's not the Texas I remember. So, yeah, it's time they stand up and put an end to this nonsense.
Well, sorry to tell you, but Texas has been an illusion for a very long time. We've got three presidential library monuments to mass murdering war criminals that never attended the colleges where their memorial libraries are located. And that's LBJ, Big Bush, and Baby Bush. So it's pretty disgusting what we're having to live through here. But there again, every epiphany is permanent, so what we're going to do is just wait some more of these folks up. Looks like we've got a group of Harley riders that are showing up for this event.
Are they wearing masks?
No, they're not wearing helmets either.
All right. I like it. That's good. That's good.
So anyhow, where were we? Oh, the 60,000 downwinders that are diagnosed with cancers in the New York area were all shipped to old folks' homes where they were quickly infected with COVID and were allowed to be documented as COVID deaths instead of being leukemias and lung cancer deaths due to the radiation from 911. So there you have another cover-up. Planning on this goes back to Operation Dark Winter, which was a Rockefeller event in June of 2001, which is followed in July 2001 by the NASA Future Wars.
Oh, Joe, we're at the bottom of the hour. So just hold on for a minute, and we'll be right back after the bottom of the hour break. Stay tuned, everyone.
I'm doing a live radio interview. These are my reports.
Okay, we're back for the final half hour of Operation Scorpio. I'm here with Giuseppe, my co-host, and Joe Olson. And Joe, we've been talking about 9/11 and viruses, and I want to make sure that we touch upon some of your research into this so-called climate change emergency we're all experiencing, because it's interesting how climate change dovetails in to this COVID agenda. I've been calling, you know, the coronavirus the magic virus, because it seems to be able to fulfill all the dreams of the globalist elite that they've had secretly planned for so long. And isn't it interesting how our carbon footprint is down quite a bit due to coronavirus? Joe, are you there?
I wonder if Joe muted. And Joe, you're muted. I think he realized to mute during the break. It shows he's still here.
Yeah.
Oh,
there he
Am
is.
I unmuted?
There we go.
Hey.
Yeah. We can hear you now.
My smartphone does exactly what my dumb thumb tells it to do. Yeah. No gas molecule can capture, store, redirect, or amplify radiant energy photons moving at the speed of light. And that is the electromagnetic spectrum from 0 degrees Kelvin all the way up to ultraviolet light is all electromagnetic radiation moving at the speed of light. Those photons are not amplified, captured, stored, or redirected by any gas molecule. Any absorption only happens in discrete frequencies, and by the law of conservation of energy, by absorbing energy, you reduce the energy of the incoming photon. So what happens with an absorption is that within a billionth of a second, you have an emission of a longer wavelength, lower energy, which means that everything that happens to sunlight in the atmosphere is a cooling effect, and it actually cools 30% of the incoming solar before it ever even hits the surface of the Earth. Increasing the amount of CO2 in the air only increases the amount of cooling because you're just taking and absorbing higher energy photons and releasing longer wavelength, lower energy photons. So this is all part of the same bogus agenda that these people have pushed with sustainable energy, which I've got a great article at Princeton Scientific called The Green Prince of Darkness Exposed, how every alternative energy method is a net energy loser. It takes more energy to produce a solar cell or a windmill or batteries than you ever get out of them. And that's what the part
exactly.
Of the equation
that and not only that, you know, there's no way that you're going to power a major city with windmills and solar panels. It's not going to happen.
Oh, they've got half the service life that they claim. Yeah, why do you think they have to replace the solar cells on the space station every 7 years? Because it's nothing but molecular erosion. And the elements that they use to get those free electrons from are finite themselves. So you're trying to create an energy industry that is self-destructing within less than a 20-year cycle, which is what we're seeing happening in California, where they got rolling blackouts everywhere. Before Enron started taking over the California grid, they had 25% spare capacity. There would have never, ever been a rolling blackout, even if you had multiple plants or substations go offline in the whole state of California. Now they're having rolling blackouts on a weekly basis because they've designed an energy system that's totally, inherently, intentionally defective. And it's all part of the same agenda. They want to strip us of our property. They want to strip us of our rights. And one way to do that is strip us of the energy that freed us from slavery and animal-powered production. Hello?
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, and it really does all connect together because so many objectives of the new Green Deal are already being reached with this coronavirus hoax that we're living through. And, you know, the idea that we're going to power these major cities with windmills and solar panels isn't only insane, but it's also very dangerous because how are people going to heat their houses in the colder parts of the country if there's no power?
Well, yeah, you have a lot of times when you have a winter event where there's the clouds block out the sun and you don't have any wind flowing. And you have to power those windmills during ice storms because they can build up enough sweat on the blades to actually break the blades. When you have summer doldrums and there's no wind moving the blades get hot enough to warp, and then you end up having to replace the blades. So in Texas, you have to rotate the windmill in the summer when there's no wind at all using electricity. In the winter, you have to have electric heating strips in the blades in order to keep them from building up ice in a condition where they're not generating any electricity at all. So those are net losers under certain meteorological conditions to begin with. But the whole thing, it's full spectrum warfare. And these SOBs own the four horsemen, and they've used them repeatedly, and they're using as many of them as possible right now.
Yeah, Joe, it's really crazy. The What are your thoughts on the massive disinformation agents that plague the 9/11 truth movement? Who do you feel are the most egregious offenders of disinformation?
Well, certainly Richard Gage and Judy Woods, but then there's also a guy named Steve Deak, D-apostrophe-E-A-E-K-A, who Fetzer and I interviewed. His hypothesis is that the towers were built out of cardboard and sheetrock, and they were going to collapse anyway, and they just happened to collapse that day. His is the hollow tower theory, which is just absolutely completely bogus. And then the other one I mentioned is the guy who's in my unequivocal 911 nukes, and I don't want to get the name wrong, so I'm not going to mention the name right now, and I don't have access to my files. But he's the one who claimed to be a photographer that was in a meeting in 1988, and that they said the buildings had major structural damage from the corrosion of the aluminum and aluminum skin on the steel frame and the outside of the building, and that they were loaded with asbestos. Well, asbestos was outlawed in 1972. It was on the first 39 floors of tower number one, but there was zero asbestos above that, and there was zero asbestos in building seven or in building two. So that part of his argument is completely bogus. The second thing is that you have a galvanic reaction between steel and aluminum, but it's based on the galvanic series, and aluminum is the sacrificial metal. The same way that you put galvanizing on steel, you put a zinc coating on the outside of the steel because the zinc will sacrifice itself to protect the steel. You'll form a layer of zinc oxide, which keeps you from forming any iron oxide. And those are very effective coatings, and we've known about the galvanic series for engineers have used it for hundreds of years. We use galvanic protection on pipelines, and we also use them on structures and marine applications. So we're very well aware of how the galvanic series works. There's no way that the aluminum on the outside of the building was causing any fatigue or failure of the steel structure of the building. So that guy has, first of all, no academic credentials, and second of all, he's a complete bogus representative, and unfortunately, Robert David Steele promotes him repeatedly as evidence that the buildings were said to be torn down in 1988 when there's no evidence of that. It would have been really hard to isolate that particular information stream from all of the building inspectors and all of the mortgage reviewers and insurance underwriters that would have had access to that kind of material for decades before the event happened. So that guy is in particular, I'd be happy to debate him anytime. I'd debate Richard Gage, and I've asked him to debate repeatedly, and the same thing with Judy Woods. So, but the people who won't debate are the ones who are the disinformation agents.
Yeah, Joel, that's the classic.
Judy Wood has some interesting concepts in her book, but she really doesn't offer any proof of this hypothesis of a DEW, and I'm not exactly sure where the DEW weapon was supposed to be beamed down from, or what technology specifically was used to do this, or who would have access to such technology. It could have been Dr. Strangelove or the Keebler Elves. So I always found that to be a little strange, or at least lacking in her theory.
Well, I listened to her interviews with Alex Jones and George Norrie at Coast to Coast. I went on her website and spent probably 40 hours reviewing every article that she had up on her website. I saw several additional interviews. And I had a list of questions, and I sent her an email and said I'd like to discuss this stuff with you. Well, I got her phone number, called her on the phone. I said, Judy, I've just got a couple of questions. She goes, have you bought my book yet? And I said, no, but if you could answer 10 questions, I will probably buy your book. But I've just got questions that you should be able to address. She goes, I'm not answering any questions until you buy my book. And I said, well, how about just three questions? I'm not answering any questions until you buy a book. I said, well, you're not in the business of expanding truth. You're in the business of selling books. So
you're saying, Joe, sexy Judy Woods is pay for play.
Well, who knows? I mean, she did a good, flashy website, which probably took a certain amount of resource from somewhere. Certainly an enormous investment of time, probably more research than one person could have done on her own. So, yeah, she amassed a good library of material. It's just she draws all of the wrong conclusions intentionally. And after I had my conversation with her, she did produce something that said that the directed energy weapon was located at an abandoned military base over in the Bronx. Well, if you look at the window going to the Trade Center building, it's littered with high-rise buildings. There's no clear path for the energy to get from a ground-based source over to that location. And if you're doing a sky-based source, look at the level of energy that was required. Those buildings vaporized in 14 seconds. That's probably more electrical capacity than the entire planet produces on a weekly basis. And you were able to do that twice over a 14-second interval for two buildings? That's completely absurd. Not only that, but to project energy, just like the energy coming from the sun, just like sound waves, it's a function of the square of the distance. So if you have something that's twice as far away, it takes four times the amount of energy. So no matter where you locate that thing, if it's not directly at the building site, then it has to have a multiple of whatever that distance is times that distance. So if it was located a mile away, it would take twice as much energy. If it was located 2 miles away, it would take four times as much energy. If it was multiple, on and on. So you just isolate the potential for that even happening, and it's impossible. I'm sorry. I would debate her. I'd love to debate her. I'd certainly love to debate her in person, rather than just do an online deal. But she refuses to debate. Same thing with Richard Gates. She refuses to debate anybody on the nuclear hypothesis. So that's where we are.
Yeah. Very interesting. Joe, I want to ask you, what do you think, hit those towers? Obviously, it wasn't traditional airplanes. And how do you think those marks were made on the building, the Wile E. Coyote, perfect mark, especially considering that, the wings are full of fuel and that the airplane is essentially just a big cigar tube, flying around. No way it could have pierced through the building like that. Do you think they just had a series of charges set, or how do you think they did that?
Well, the 767 has 13-foot diameter steel turbine, high bypass turbojet props, and that material would have been hard enough that it couldn't have penetrated through the building. It would have, portions of it would have at least hit the face of the building and then fallen down to the ground. There was no evidence of any of the four engines on the ground. No landing gear, no luggage, no seat, no black boxes, nothing that would indicate that a jet airliner hit. But you do have two openings. And if you go to FEMA 403_CH2, this gives a complete description of the two World Trade Center buildings as they existed before. And it shows that the exterior wall sections were built in three-story sections at a boatyard across the Hudson, shipped across on barges, and then swung over by crane into building places. And this included three vertical plate girders that were 16 by 16, as well as three 52-inch high, 2-inch thick steel spandrel sections. The spandrel sections were bolted together endwise, and then they were all bolted together on the vertical column side, and then they were all welded together, top and bottom cords of the floor joists on every floor, and then they put an additional shear tie through the top cord of the joist and welded a 3/4-inch steel rebar into the exterior plate girder prior to pouring the floor with concrete. So the assembly was absolutely absurd. What they did was they came in there and cut all of those bar joist connections, got up inside the the vertical box column, and cut the connectors there, and then they cut the connectors between the spandrel sections on each floor, planted charges in it, and blew four panels out of the wall completely. One of them landed beside the Greek Orthodox St. Paul's Church, and you can see the thing laying on the ground with no deformation on any of the bolt holes for the three floors of spandrel section or on the end bolt, and you can see the concave where the shaped charges blew the holes out of the building prior to the impact. Now, they had to have something that would indicate a sound source and then also focus as a target for a holographic projection. That would have been a cruise missile, and that's consistent when you look at the FEMA 403 document as far as the impact after those two panels had been blown out. So they blow out two panels, one panel apart, on each of the impact floors, and then they hit it with a cruise missile, and the cruise missile caused deformation across the remaining sections of box girders that indicate it was hit from a sideways direction. So it's all completely consistent. If we had the ability to sit down and do a weekend-long video presentation with all the slides and all the materials, it'd be completely transparent to everybody. But that's the problem. We're dealing with a really complicated subject matter, and we're dealing with a public that's been dumbed down for so many generations that they just don't have the capability of doing, rational thinking. And they will make, yes.
Yeah, 9/11 was certainly a trauma-based mind control operant conditioning, and it seems like that's what's going on now with the COVID-19 scamdemic. Do you see any continuity there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, these people have spent decades doing psychological research, doing MK-Ultra experiments on the defective portions of our society, which would be the orphans and the prisoners and the veterans groups and, anybody they can isolate, kidnap children. So they know exactly how to manipulate our minds, and they have complete access to everything it takes to manipulate our minds.
Yeah, and they're getting better and better at it. They've had 100 years since Edward Bernays, Shlomo Freud's nephew, figured out this actually really works. We can use all this. And so it's just insidious. What are your thoughts now that the major vaccine companies are all suddenly aligning with the concerns of the anti-vaxxers that there's never been a true double-blind placebo test, that vaccines should be actually proven to be safe and all that? What are your thoughts on suddenly changing their tune so dramatically?
Well, I think they've overplayed their hand. And, I'm not a huge Trump supporter. I went to his rallies in Houston in 2018 and Dallas in 2019. And I stood with thousands of other MAGA supporters and explained to them nuclear 911. And I had very little pushback. I'd say less than 1% offered any objection at all. Everybody went, God, that really makes more sense than what the government's telling us. Well, duh. So I think what has happened is that Trump inadvertently has forced their hand. And like I said, I'm no supporter of his. And he's done an enormous amount of negative things that I could never forgive him for. Horrible appointments, and it looks like the reason I got bumped offline is I got a IM for the president saying he was announcing his Supreme Court pick. Well, I'm guessing it's a Jesuit or a Jew, so take your choice, because that's all we got sitting on the Supreme Court right now. So anyhow, what I think has happened is that enough people have awoken that they pulled the same scams over and over and over, that we're starting to exert pressure that they don't know how to respond to any other way. TruthStream Media, which is Aaron and Melissa Dykes, formerly with InfoWars, has a great series of videos. They usually do about a video a month, but they're absolutely fabulous researchers. They did one on the NASA event, and it's called Future Wars 2025, and it's already. And I think they posted that in 2016. After I mentioned it in one of my articles, YouTube removed it, which I thought was shocking that it had even been up that long. But it's not available on YouTube. You can probably find it on BitChute. But I think what happened is NASA and all of the Rockefeller planning was for this event to happen in 2025. because Trump is not playing completely on their game card at this point, and they've tried every trick in the book to get rid of him. He's an essential threat to them, and so they said, well, it looks like we got enough things in place. Let's go ahead and pull the scandemic in 2020 instead of waiting another 5 years, because we didn't get Hillary, which would have made it a complete shoe-in. And so now the part of the mask thing is the testing for amount of social pressure. I go to a restaurant today, Golden Corral, which I haven't been to in 20 years, and they won't let me in the door without wearing a face mask. You go up to the food line, you have to put on a pair of plastic gloves, and they've got a stack of plastic gloves sitting there, so you put those on to go to the food line. When you go back to the table, they come and take your plastic gloves away from you, so you have to use new plastic gloves the next time you put on your face mask and go back to the buffet line. The whole thing's completely insane. If the virus is new, all the little tricks they had to jump through to be able to infect everybody on the planet, we'd already be infected and dead. They don't have the capability of doing that. Every virus, because it's picking up a portion of its host, is automatically creating herd immunity because it's getting either stronger with each generation of the virus in its host, and therefore leading to its own destruction by killing all of its hosts, or it's getting weaker because it's being diluted with human DNA through every iteration, and next thing you know, it's completely exterminated itself. The smallpox was first discovered in Vikings back 10,000 BC. They found all the archaeology we've done before has not found smallpox viruses anywhere other than this Norwegian population 10,000 years ago. It remained a very non-virulent strain until the 1700s, when there was started to be outbreaks. Then they started inoculating people with cowpox, and next thing you know, they had increased the virility of smallpox. And then smallpox, they required everybody in England to have a vaccination until 1859, when the smallpox was naturally declining anyway. And so at that point, they quit requiring mandatory smallpox vaccinations, and it completely went away. That's what happens with viruses. They self-attenuate. And so we don't have to have magic big pharma. We've lived for a million years and evolved without them. We don't need them now.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, because
right.
That's so true, Joe. You're really hitting on some great points, because if these viruses were so deadly, the human race would have been wiped out a long time ago. And suddenly now we can't live without vaccines and all kinds of expensive medications.
Well, there's 31 varieties of coronavirus, but there's actually probably a billion species of virus because they exist everywhere. And here's the other unnamed factor, is that you have a biogenome that surrounds your body. A human body is made up of approximately 3 trillion cells. Each of those cells has bacteria that's smaller than that cell by order of magnitude, and then inside each bacteria are viruses smaller by an order of magnitude. And so you can't live without bacteria eating the dead skin off your body and keeping the other pathogens, the funguses and the molds, from growing on your skin. So your skin is covered with helpful, beneficial bacteria. When you get sick and they give you antibiotics, they also give you probiotics so you can restore the bacterial colonies that are inside your intestinal tract, because you can't digest any food if you have a sterile digestive tract. You can't take the components out of food and introduce them into your circulatory system unless you have bacteria inside your gut. And so
that is so true, Joe.
We
yeah, that's so true. And here they want us to, you know, bathe ourselves in hand gel and wear a mask so we're not exposed to anything. Oh. We're down to the final minute. Joe, can we get your final thoughts for the show here, please?
Yes. Anybody that is in Texas, please go to Austin on October 3rd. If the weather's decent, we need to have 10,000. 20,000 would be even better. Texas.
And Joe, will you cover that live for us? Will you
yes,
cover that
I
live
sure
for us
will.
Next week? Great.
Yes, yes, yes. And it should probably be a lot easier event to cover because they'll have loudspeakers And I'm going to be at a booth with Ron Avery. So if you're in Texas, come by and say hi. We're going to be promoting the Question Everything Conference with James Spetzer in Austin, first weekend in November. And like I said, me and Jeff Prager will do a two-hour presentation on the 911 nuke event. So it should be a great conference in November. Should be a great rally in Austin next Saturday. So if you can possibly make it, if you can't, then at least go online and look for it. And then you might look for Rail Club Live in Fort Worth website. Watch today's presentation. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay, well, that's it. With my click, Joe, thanks for coming on. We want to have you on again soon. That was a great interview. Thank you for your time. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll see you next week. Until then, bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.